live on the Talk of the Quad Cities KQ&A. It's time for Q&A with DJ Phone. Today's program is sponsored by the Yavapai Regional Medical Center, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce, Artful Eye Jewelers, and Prescott College. Now, here's your host for Q&A, DJ Phone.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Q&A. I'm DJ Phone. Got a really entertaining and kind of enlightening and disturbing show for you today in distinct half parts there. First half of the show, we're going to be talking about some fun. It's a terrific show coming to the PCA Stage 2. It's called Fat Pig. And if that title kind of intrigues you, you'll find out why. We have Kevin Nissen here, who is the director of the play, along with Will Larson. Will, you're in the play, aren't you?
I am.
Indeed, and that is a Neil LaBute play, and he's kind of controversial in his own way, so we'll talk about that. It's coming to the little Black Box Theater. After the news with Link, I'll have a replay, and I never do this on Q&A. This is the first time I've done this. I'm going to replay an interview I ran about 3 months ago because of the 1,500 or so interviews I've done on this show. This one got the most emails, both for and against. It was very controversial. It's an interview with Jason Riley. He is a Wall Street Journal columnist who has written a book called False Black Power? Question mark at the end. And he questions whether or not the most famous black leaders in this country, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, people like this, even Barack Obama, were they doing their own people a favor or a disservice with what they did promoting their cause? It's a very controversial book, and he doesn't pull any punches. So I will rerun that interview for you at about 3:30. In the meantime, I want to let you know that the Tuesday Night Classic Series continues at the Harkins in PV, the Harkins 14, tomorrow night. Say hello to my little friends when you go to see Scarface, the Brian De Palma Al Pacino update of the Paul Muni Gangster Classic. Just keep in mind, don't take the kids. There are at least 215 F-bombs in that movie. So don't take the kids to see Scarface. Otherwise, pretty good movie. Also, we want to let you know that the Chick-fil-A will be opening next week in Prescott Valley. They're holding a hiring fair today from 3:30 to 6:30 at the Prescott Goodwill Career Center. That's at 1385 Iron Springs Road. Recruiters are looking to hire about 80 people for a variety of positions at the new Chick-fil-A that opens next week. So I will have the Chick-fil-A franchisee, Sarah Rodriguez, on this show Thursday for an interview about that big day. Well, it's time to talk about Fat Pig. Well, that's a very, very impolite title, but a very fitting title, because Kevin Nissen, tell us about what Neil LaBute meant with this play.
Okay. First of all, good to see you again, DJ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The play Fat Pig, we've said before, the title's kind of disarming when you first hear it, but once you see the play, it makes perfect sense, because it is so jarring. Just as it is jarring when anyone is labeled with that moniker, mm-hmm. Fat Pig, and the way that it just sort of hangs around somebody that heavily is the same effect as the title itself. Mm-hmm. So the play itself is about basically tries to be a love story. Mm-hmm. It's between Tom and Helen. They meet sort of accidentally, and Tom is just overcome by this woman. She's honest, she's beautiful, but even though she's a plus-size woman, she is like no other woman he's ever met before in mm-hmm. his life. And he pursues that relationship, but he does a lot of it in secret. He doesn't tell the people in the office about her. In fact, he even lies about it because he's afraid of being judged by it. So the play is really about the tension between this love affair that he has with this woman, Helen, and the voices, often represented by Will Larson here as mm-hmm. Carter, that speak in his ear and tell him, you know what? She's not good enough. She's just not good enough for you. You know, you need to date someone that is your own kind. And I think mm-hmm. that's actually a line that Will has in the play. So that is really about, so how does this work out? You know, it's a situation where he's in love with her, but does he have the courage to keep her? Mm-hmm. And that's really what the play is about.
I would gather there's a lot of peer pressure involved because you want to look past the surface. You are in love with somebody, and you appreciate the wonderful qualities they have. But other people just look at one thing, don't they?
Mm-hmm. When he's alone with her, he sees her just as she is, and he is absolutely head over heels about her. But when there's other people around, he sees her through their eyes. He can't help himself from doing it. He despises that weakness in himself, and he tries to overcome it. He tries to be better. She tries to encourage him to be better, and that the play works toward the resolution of that very conflict.
Sure. Will, tell us about your role in the play.
I have the pleasure of playing Carter, Tom's best friend and coworker, arguably the antagonist of the show. It was an interesting character to play. Going in, I knew that I'd have to say some very unkind things. And that's, you know, that's really Carter's role, is he represents that part of society that is willing to say whatever they want to say, you know, in order to hurt people's feelings. Mm-hmm. And he sort of sees his friend Tom struggling in this relationship, not only to, you know, love someone that he loves, but to be honest with his friends. And instead of kind of helping him through that, instead he just makes it more difficult for him. And he, just by saying, you know, these are the challenges you're going to face every day. If people see you in the mall, they're going to turn their heads and they're going to watch you and look at you. And it's a difficult piece to play, just because I know I have to represent all of the, just the meanness, the cruelty,
the cad-like qualities.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did my best to have fun with it and enjoy myself. But there's a part of Carter that is also in pain. You know, he has his own pain from his past and his parents' relationship that's revealed a little bit in the show. And I hope through that piece of the show to show just how much people are, you know, hurting, especially those that are cruel and bullies and those that go out of their way to kind of pick apart someone else's appearance, that they're oftentimes just as much hurting as the other people around them.
It makes me wonder sometimes how people who have relationships that don't work out, did they meet up with this person to impress themselves and each other or to impress their friends?
Exactly.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
And then there is another character in the play called Jeannie, and she is, okay, if there is anybody there, she is the it girl. Mm-hmm. She's pretty. She's smart. She is the one that you want to be seen with. And Tom had a previous relationship with her. And, of course, she finds out that he ended that relationship to pursue this relationship with this heavy woman. She just can't understand it.
Yeah.
It consumes her. Why has he done this? Because I am everything that guys like.
Sure.
And she's the trophy, but he turned it down. And you're right. A lot of times, relationships are based simply on something as shallow as that.
Mm-hmm. Who are the ladies in the show?
Helen is played by Ashley Lawler, who was one of the characters in Calendar Girls, if anybody had a chance to see that. And she does a wonderful job. She's a wonderful actress. And the other, Jeannie, the girl that works in the office with Tom and Carter, is Natalie Garrity. And this is her first PCA performance, and she's done just a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of being the first time with the PCA, Will, Kevin, you both done lots of shows, both at the main stage and in the little black box theater. Mm-hmm. Tell me, both of you, what is your impression of how you have to treat your show differently between the larger main stage, where the stage is separate, and being right in the middle, and in some cases only inches from the people attending?
Sure.
Yeah, we were talking about that before in a show I did recently. You'll have audience members who actually whisper to the characters to try and encourage them. Oh, watch out, someone's behind you. It's just like you're sitting in the movies. There's more of an intimate feel with the black box. Mm-hmm. It literally, you know, there's a chance that you're going to bump into one of the actors or audience members. And so when you're choosing the shows that will be performed there, but also how to produce them, you have to take into consideration all of those ideas of intimacy and just the fact that when you're staging or blocking the show, you can't go out into the audience. You know, you can't break that. But I'm sure Kevin could say a little bit more about directing
it. Things like sight lines, you know, something as simple as that. You have to sort of manipulate and orchestrate the blocking so that everybody in the audience gets a chance to see as equal amount. Mm-hmm. You can't just have somebody's back to one side of the audience the whole time. So sometimes you just have to find a way to move people around, if for no other reason, so that the other side of the audience can see mm-hmm. that character's face for a while as well.
Yeah. Now, what's the old thing they say about actors? Be sure to hit your marks, mm-hmm. don't trip over the scenery, and don't chew the scenery. Don't trip over the furniture, and don't chew the scenery. That all comes into play in a little black box theater, doesn't it?
Yep. Yes.
And you can't get away with anything in a little black box theater. You know, you can sometimes slip something. You know, if you're not in the spotlight on the main stage, you can maybe sneak something off stage or grab a prop you missed. Mm-hmm. But when you're in that stage two, everyone's eyes are on you, and they can see every little twitch.
Sure, sure. And, of course, Neil LaBute, he also wrote the stage play In the Company of Men, which became a very controversial movie. I sense a little bit of David Mamet in what he writes, a very masculine point of view, and not afraid to drop some very biting lines, correct?
And yeah, not afraid to attack things that might be considered, politically correct, and just take it head on. In fact, I think the
dedication
is to David Mamet.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, so good job, DJ. That was good.
Nice call.
But yes, a lot of similarities there. Mm-hmm.
We are talking to Kevin Nissen and William Larson from the PCA. They're staging Fat Pig at the PCA Stage 2 on what dates?
It starts Thursday, January 11th, and it runs, from Thursday through Sunday, always a matinee on Sunday for the next 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Last show is January 28th.
And we'll be back with more from Kevin and Will in just a moment on today's Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, streaming live, you know where, in the words of the immortal Buzz Lightyear, to infinity and beyond on KAQNA.com.
Load up the RV and hit the open road. To the repair shop? Now that's not my idea of a fun trip, and it sure isn't convenient. So let High Country Rec B Center come to you. Mobile service is just one of their specialties. They'll even troubleshoot for you over the phone, so you're not paying for unnecessary parts and repairs. And they're an authorized warranty and service center for all the major RV appliance manufacturers and extended warranty work. So to schedule service or just ask them a question, call them at 772-8231 or online at hicountryrvcenter.com.
Hi, my name is Cody Ann Yarns, and I'm the owner of the Cody Ann Team at Realty Executives, a real estate sales team.
And I'm Michael Yarns, owner of Rent Right Management Solutions. Cody Ann and I both earned our bachelor's degrees from Prescott College.
Prescott is where we met 12 years ago, and Prescott College is where we learned the skills we needed to be successful entrepreneurs. Every day, we are proud of the work we are doing to enrich our community.
Prescott College, making a difference globally and locally, starting right here in Prescott.
Your dentist live right in your neighborhood is really a cool thing. That means we understand what's going on in the community. The staff at Bradshaw Family Dental are your neighbors. We shop where you shop. Our kids go to school with yours. And yes, we have teeth too. So if you're putting off getting dental work done because of insurance or financial reasons, talk to us. What are neighbors for? Find Bradshaw Family Dental in Prescott Valley or online at bradshawfamilydental.com.
Do not paint your own house. If you paint your house, you will spill the paint. If you spill the paint, you will have to replace your floor. To replace your floor, you will pay the floor man enough money to go to Hawaii. Don't pay your floor man to go to Hawaii. Call Century Painting. We will paint your house, not spill the paint, save you money, and send you to Hawaii. So call Century Painting, 778-2374, or go to CenturyPainting.com.
Membership in the Prescott Chamber of Commerce is good for your business. As a member, your business will be listed on the Prescott Chamber website and in the Chamber's annual directory. You're also eligible to place brochures in the Chamber's lobby and opportunities galore to network with other business people at monthly mixers and other events. Join the Prescott Chamber today at 445-2000. Prescott's business advocate, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce.
Provide value. That is what a CPA can do for you. Hi, this is David A. Snyder, CPA. Now is a great time of year for business valuations. Valuations are for providing a value for your business so you can retire from it, sell it, or expand it. With my ex-military, task-oriented mindset, and over 20 years of experience, you can trust that you can get the most accurate business valuation. Give me a call or visit DavidASnyderCPA.com for more information. You deserve the sharpest in Arizona. David A. Snyder, CPA.
Listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Fung.
We are back live at 316 with Kevin Nissen and also with Will Larson from the PCA for Stage 2's production of Fat Pig. You know, there's an underlying thing here, too, Kevin, about Fat Pig, where it's about seeing the beauty inside, correct?
That's it, yep.
And when you look at it, it used to be until about, I'm going to guess, about a decade or so ago, if you were a woman in Hollywood or in music, if you were 1 pound overweight, were dead.
Yeah.
And then we had Melissa McCarthy, who starred in a CBS series, Mike and Molly, and then, of course, in Bridesmaids and, you know, all the other great shows, and she hosted SNL and everything, and she's become a superstar. We had the comic actress Rebel Wilson in the Pitch Perfect movies. We had A.D. Bryant on SNL. We had the singer Adele, who's a plus size. All of a sudden, it's not a career killer anymore to be a little bit larger than a size 2, is it?
I agree. The way we look at it is changing. I even was watching a show, This Is Us. I don't know if you've ever seen that, where they have it's a storyline involving different people. But one of the storylines, one of the most important storylines, is this very plus-size woman and how she deals with that. And she has a boyfriend who's a plus-size man. And so that issue is really, really explored, not unlike it is in the play Fat Pig. But yes, it seems like the roles have opened up to allow for all of these differences.
And I think in general it really is pointing to the fact that you don't know someone's value just by looking at them.
True.
You know, you used to be able to say, I know how good of an actress you're going to be. I know how good of a movie you're going to make because I can look at you and tell by your size, .. And now we're, you know, moving forward and the whole the gender issue, sexuality, we're moving out of the era where you can look at someone and tell their value just by that first glance. And that's what this show is just screaming to the audience is, you know, Tom is constantly faced with that decision of, you know, how valuable is this woman to me? What am I willing to sacrifice for her? And obviously it becomes quite the conflict for him.
And there's an interesting dichotomy, well, not this, is not dichotomy, but a parallel line here. Because Kevin, your day job, your part of your job is seeing the beauty in kids.
Right.
Tell us about Friendly Pines Camp.
Well, I've been at Friendly Pines Camp for almost, well, for over 35 summers.
Wow.
So I did it when I was in college. But yes, and you know, that's what I really impress on our counselors is that, you know, it's your job to find the good. Every kid is good. That's what I believe. And some may say that's naive, but I believe it. I believe that the good is there. Sometimes society makes it difficult for that good to come through.
Bad traits are taught.
But it's there. And it's your job to find it. And we really, really emphasize and, you know, no bullying, that Friendly Pines or any good camp shouldn't just be Friendly Pines, is a place that you can come and be who you are. This is a safe place for you. You be who you are. If it's just for 2 weeks, this is, and this, you know, camp is a place where, you know, nobody's going to put you down for that. And we really sort of police that very, very hard.
As part of that last note, how do you handle the constant presence of the smartphone?
You know, that's very interesting. I thought that was going to be our biggest problem in camps, is phones. That we would have kids come to camp and parents say, you know what, no phone, no calling home, that's a deal breaker. I'm not sending my kid to camp. It has actually gone the other way. Parents will say to me, okay, now, no phones, right? And I said, no, they're not allowed to have them. Good, that's what I want. No video games, right? No, I want my child for 2 weeks not to do any of that. So it's actually worked in our favor, which was a complete surprise. We thought that this was going to be the battle that was going to change forever.
Sure. What got you first involved in that?
I needed a job one summer, And a friend of mine worked at the camp when I was at Arizona State University. I went there, never been to camp in my life, didn't go as a kid. And I thought, okay, this is like the greatest thing in the world. So I did that all through college, and then I taught high school and did that in the summers. And then in 1990, they offered me a job year-round, so that's where I've been.
You know, it's funny because when I was 12, I was addicted to television, as most baby boomers were at that age.
We all were.
And Mom sent me away to summer camp for 2 weeks. First couple of days, I was completely homesick. I missed my television.
Yeah.
And I found out, wow, there's more to life.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I became a big camping buff and stuff like this, an outdoors person, and it changed my life.
It does. Mm-hmm.
It really does.
Plus, life-changing.
It teaches you to be social. You're learning with people who are also new, who are also strangers.
Yeah.
And you overcome those things, don't you?
Sure. Kids have to learn how to compromise.
They have to.
They're sharing this little cabin. They're sharing the attention of a counselor. They're sharing a bathroom and a shower. And a lot of them don't ever have to compromise anything, but at camp you do. You have to learn to live the skills that it takes to live with somebody in a small shared area.
You learn to share values too. Well, we've known you from a couple of shows at the PCA. Give us a little background about yourself. What brought you here?
I'm originally from Wisconsin, a small town in southeastern Wisconsin, and came out to Arizona to study at Prescott College. I had a few choices for universities, and I decided to go to the warmest.
And smart
that
man
has brought me here and kept me here for quite a while. Graduated from PC in 2014, and pretty soon after that started working with the Prescott Center for the Arts. Just fell in love with the arts community here.
Sure.
It's absolutely wonderful. It's very much family oriented. It's very much craft oriented, which you don't always expect to find in a in small town theater. And that has been a big part of what's kept me here. And similarly to what you guys are talking about with camping, you know, theater is a place to connect with people. It's a place to break down those barriers and learn those life skills. And definitely a place to get your kids away from their phones.
Sure.
Kevin's been nice, but there's some directors who will, you know, just, hey, I'll take that phone. I'll put it in the dumpster outside if you're, if you're done using it. Thank you very much. And so, yeah, just came here, fell in love with Prescott, fell in love with Arizona. I mean, I certainly did not mind the 60 degree weather over Christmas break.
In fact, during the polar bear splash Saturday, I was doing a broadcast remote, and the Prescott Valley Town Councilman, Marty Grossman, was there. And I said, Marty, going to jump in the water? Is it too cold for you? He said, nothing's too cold for me. I was a letter carrier for 30 years in New York City. We had weather like this all the time. Okay, very well. Kevin, I meant to ask you with your working with kids and everything. I interviewed Rob White about a year and a half ago. He was putting on, I think it was called the Best Christmas Pageant Ever.
Yeah.
Had a cast of about, I believe, 75,000 kids. And isn't it amazing how much discipline kids learn by being on stage, by having to rehearse, having to know their lines, being part of an ensemble. They're backing each other up. What a great lesson for a kid.
It is. It is. The lot of things kids need, they need an environment that encourages self-control, to be able to be quiet, to be to listen to other people, and I think theater is an excellent place for that.
Will, have you worked in plays with kids?
I haven't. Actually, no, I did do a little bit with the Young Playwrights Festival and worked just alongside some in the 24-Hour Play Festival. And I find it, I'm intimidated by children. They have so much energy.
Well, so was W.C. Fields. What was the old line? Never work with kids or animals because they'll steal the show?
Exactly, yeah. And so I actually kind of become very reserved around children. But I'm also constantly reminded that that we're role models. You know, no matter how much you want to just be that invisible person walking through the room, how you carry yourself, what you say, how you behave, they're picking up every little thing you do. And I think that's probably why I'm so intimidated, is because, you know, I don't want to have to think about, oh gosh, was I supposed to say that in front of that kid, or should I?
And Kevin, as a director, if you've ever worked with kids, isn't it amazing the first time at a performance when a child recites his or her line, and here's the response from the audience.
Right.
And you can tell, hey, I can dig this. This is
that
nice
sense of pride.
Boy,
that,
I'll tell
you. Never, you know, maybe it's the first real success that they've ever felt.
And not only that, but
they'll
a lot
never
of,
forget.
And a lot of kids who are outsiders, who feel like outsiders, they find out, hey, I have a talent. And then they find other people who are outsiders who are in that talented group, too. I'm thinking of the movie Perks of Being a Wallflower. Perfect example. Kids who think they're outsiders, and boom. We got something in common.
Sure.
What a great way to exercise that on
creates
the stage.
Very strong connections.
It does.
Absolutely.
Tell us one more time when Fat Pig takes the stage at the PCA Stage 2, three dumpsters down from the main stage.
Our opening night is Thursday, January 11th at 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, it's every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday is a matinee, mm-hmm. 2 o'clock. And that runs all the way until January 28th.
Just look for the light bulb in the alley right behind Peregrine Books, right?
Very good.
Sounds like a great show. Thank you for Kevin Nissen and Will Larson for joining us today on Q&A. Stay tuned, because we're going to have a very controversial interview coming your way right after news with Link on today's Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities. 11:30 a.m., 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, streaming live at KQ&A.com.
It's Kara Pfeiffer from New York Filet Jewelers.
Hey,
diamonds and jewelry are beautiful things, and ours is a beautiful business. We truly love what we do. We get to make amazing jewelry for amazing people. We want to thank you for letting us be a part of your life's special moments. We've been a part of your weddings, engagements, birthdays, anniversaries, and lots of just because I love you gifts. So thank you, Prescott, for making Artful Eye Jewelers the jeweler you trust with your most happy memories. See you at the Artful Eye, your favorite jewelry store.
It's me, Sandy, with Yavapai County Contractors Association. To love and be loved is to feel the sun from both sides. YCCA loves this community. We love being your go-to resource for all your construction and remodeling needs. Before you start any construction project, call me, 778-0040. YCCA is your sunshine. Don't start without us.
When it comes to seafood, think small. Sally B's has upped the ante on their all-you-can-eat fish fry on Fridays with new oriental butterfly shrimp. That's right. Not only can you get their famous Icelandic cod for one low price, you can save a delicious shrimp like you've never had. Serve with your choice of potatoes, veggies, soup or salad, and a dinner roll. The fish fry is every Friday from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. They're in the Safeway Shopping Centre in Prescott Valley, Sally B's Cafe.
No matter what time of year it is, pests are always in season. Truly Nolan Pest Control offers a thorough approach to year-round pest control. That's right, no tags required. Bug behavior changes depending on the time of year, which is why Truly Nolan developed a proactive program for each season. Truly Nolan also uses a series of high-quality, environmentally conscious materials and offers a 100% money-back guarantee. Call Truly Nolan Pest Control at 775-4261 or visit online at trulynolan.com.
When it comes to radiation therapy for treating cancer, you want the best, and you want it close to home. At the Cancer Centers of Northern Arizona Healthcare in Sedona, a nationally recognized radiation oncologist leads our team of doctors, nurses, and therapists. We offer state-of-the-art radiation technology and provide compassionate, personalized care. For more information, visit nahealth.com or call 204-3000. Cancer Centers of Northern Arizona Healthcare, fighting cancer every step of the way together.
You're listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
Well, if you enjoyed the Golden Globes last night, just think about when the real awards come out that really means something. Of course, the Oscars, the Academy Award nominations, are being cast this week. The Academy members only have 8 days, and that started on the 5th, which was last Friday. So they have only 8 days to cast their ballots online for the movies and performances and the technical awards that they consider Oscar-worthy, and those will be announced in the next few weeks, so stay tuned for those. Speaking of staying tuned, you want to hear the interview coming up with Jason Riley, in case you missed it at the very start of the show. This interview was the most controversial one I've done in about 1,600 interviews on Q&A. Jason Riley is an author. The name of his book is False Black Power? ? At the end. He's a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He's asked some very probing questions with some enlightening and some disturbing answers. And that is coming up right after News with Link on today's Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities. 11:30 a.m., 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood. Streaming live at KQ&A.com.
Wallach & Volk Mortgage Lending is with you 100% of the way, which is why Wallach & Volk offers great rates with our 100% financing program. And you pay absolutely no money down. For more information about our extraordinary 100% financing program with zero money down, call us at 445-8730 or search us on the web at Wallach & Volk Mortgage.
License number 00128295, LNS number 16209, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hi, this is Reagan with Prescott Valley Heating and Cooling. If you've been told you need insanely expensive repairs or a new furnace, get a second opinion. We know repairs can sometimes be expensive, but not every single one. Just because we live a mile high doesn't mean your repair costs have to be. Call us for a second opinion. We have fair pricing and senior and veteran discounts. Call 458-8177, visit us at pvhac.com, and follow us on Facebook, Prescott Valley Heating and Cooling.
Let's make your hair happy. Let's go to a fun-friendly salon. Let's go to Janessa's Family Hair Care in Prescott Valley. Hi, Janessa here. Whether you're looking for a new trendy style or something more traditional, Janessa's Family Hair Care can do it. We offer everything from hair extensions, cuts, colors, and a variety of hair care for the entire family. Call 775-0320 for an appointment or find us on Facebook at Janessa's, with an E, Family Hair Care. Come on in for a smile and a style that's right for you.
If you're a small business, first impressions can make all the difference. With Grasshopper, you get all the features of a professional business phone system on your mobile phone. Choose a business phone number, make calls, and send texts. Stay connected and work from anywhere with features like Wi-Fi calling and our desktop app. Set up your account in minutes with no long-term contracts and 24/7 customer support. Make your small business big. Now get $20 off your first month when you visit grasshopper.com/radio. That's grasshopper.com/radio.
You're up before O Dark 30. You don't ask for medals or even a pat on the back. But if all your hard work is indeed its own reward, then consider the new Ram Limited Tungsten Edition as a bonus. Natura Plus leather seating, premium projector headlamps, suede headliner, packaged in the highly capable, hard-working truck you'd expect from Ram. Keep doing what you do. But who says you can't do it in a nicer truck? The new Ram Limited Tungsten, the most luxurious Ram truck ever. Ram is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
We're KQ&A.
Good afternoon, and thanks for making the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A, your choice for your Monday. I'm Link Elliott with the check of news and weather together on Q&A with DJ Phone, brought to you by Wallach & Volk. Drivers need to take precautions due to the winter storm that's expected to hit northern Arizona this week. A strong weather system will move across the area, bringing with it a good chance of rain showers tomorrow, changing to snow at higher elevations overnight into Wednesday. Meteorologist Austin Jameson has a warning for drivers.
Be prepared for adverse conditions, road conditions, slippery roads, as well as even reduced visibilities depending on if you're encountering the rain or the snow.
Jameson says drivers also need to watch out for dust storms when traveling outside the area.
There's enough wind that there is potential there, and we've been so dry for so long, we're going to have that potential to get the dust kicked up, especially west of Phoenix.
Sunny skies and warmer temperatures are expected to return Thursday. The Northern Arizona Suns continue their winning ways in 2018.
After getting a 113-108 win over Rio Grande Valley last Tuesday, the Suns traveled to Nevada to take on the Reno Bighorns Friday night. Northern Arizona led 31-20 after the first quarter and never trailed. The Suns ended up snapping the Bighorns' six-game winning streak with a 125-104 win. Guard Josh Gray had a monster game, scoring 26 points and getting 7 steals, tying a team record set by guard Shaquille Harrison on December 19th. Guard Xavier Zyla scored 26 points as well. Guard Devon Reed scored 10 points before he was recalled by the Phoenix Suns the next day. The Northern Arizona Suns have a few days off before they head to Ontario, Canada for the NBA G League Showcase. A two-game set against the Erie Bayhawks starts Wednesday morning at 11. I'm Bill Monroe reporting.
Taking a look now at your KQ&A weather. Showers likely tonight and tomorrow, should turn to snow Tuesday evening. Expect an overnight low of 44 tonight in the Prescott area, with a high of 54 tomorrow and high of 44 on Wednesday. 43 degrees tonight for Cottonwood and the Verde Valley, with a high on Tuesday of 60 and a high on Wednesday of 53. Q&A will continue after this. I'm Link Elliott for the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, and 95.5 FM. KQ&A.
If you are a current or former smoker, you may want to think about screening for lung cancer with low-dose computed tomography. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends lung cancer screening annually for those at high risk. Yavapai Regional Medical Center performs low-dose CT screening in Prescott and Prescott Valley. It only takes a few moments, and it can set your mind at ease while giving you and your doctor the information you need for intervention if needed. Lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death for men and women in the United States, and early detection is important. Talk to your doctor about your risk for lung cancer and how low-dose CT screening can help, or call YRMC's Patient Navigator at 928-771-5454. Do it for your peace of mind and for the ones you love.
When you reach your retirement age, 62 or older, additional income could make your current financial situation more stable. How about Country Bank's Home Equity Conversion Mortgage, commonly known as a reverse mortgage? Some advantages are no monthly principal and interest payment, monthly income, a line of credit, or both, plus you could delay your Social Security benefits.
Come by and see me, Suzanne Cosley at Country Bank, or call me at 928-583-9015 for more details.
Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
Join the Arizona Cardinals 2018 season ticket waitlist today, and you'll have the chance to purchase new season tickets before the general public. The 2018 home schedule features traditional NFC West matchups with the Seahawks, 49ers, and Rams. Plus, the Bears, Lions, Raiders, and Broncos will visit University of Phoenix Stadium.
Rise up, Red Sea, let's hear it!
Call 602-379-0102 or visit azcardinals.com.
Listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQNA. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
Welcome back to Q&A. We have on the phone Jason Riley. He is an acclaimed Wall Street Journal columnist and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He has written a book called False Black Power? Question mark at the end. It explains why growing black political power has not delivered the prosperity that proponents said would follow. Mr. Riley, why did you write False Black Power?
Well, I thought that the end of the Obama presidency would be a good time to test a strategy that had been put in place by the civil rights leadership back in the 1960s, and that is to elect more black officials. The thinking was that if we could just put more black politicians in office, economic prosperity for blacks would follow accordingly. It would flow naturally from accumulating more political clout. And I thought the Obama presidency was really the culmination of that strategy. Like I said, which had been put in place back in the 60s, or became really more focused on back in the 60s. And I wanted to look back and say, well, we've had a twice elected black president, lots of black mayors, governors, congressmen, and so forth. Has the black prosperity followed suit?
And why do groups, do you believe, like NAACP and activists like Al Sharpton, show such little interest in reconsidering their political strategy?
Well, I think it's because their agenda is to serve the interest of what's best for the NAACP or what's best for Al Sharpton. In other words, they pursue an agenda that keeps them relevant, whether or not that strategy is helping the people that they claim to represent.
Now, you work for the Wall Street Journal, you write for the Journal, so you would know this. Despite remarkable political successes for blacks in recent decades, the racial gaps in income, employment, poverty, home ownership, academic achievement, crime, and other measures still continue. Why do you think these gaps persist?
Yes, they have continued, and they've continued notwithstanding the fact that the civil rights strategy has succeeded on its own terms. In other words, we have elected a lot more black officials over the past 50 years. In fact, between 1970 and 2010, the number of black elected officials in the U.S. grew from fewer than 1,500 to more than 10,000, including, of course, a twice elected black president. We've, by 1990 alone, there were more than 300 black mayors in America. And mayors of big cities with large black populations, Los Angeles, Chicago, Detroit, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and not just black mayors, black police chiefs, black school superintendents. We've had black city councilmen. We've had racial gerrymandering that ensures that blacks will be elected to Congress and fill safe seats designed for them. And so despite all this tremendous political success, we still have, as you just described, racial gaps, racial disparities in everything from home ownership to income to poverty rates, educational attainment. Even under President Obama, we saw gaps in home ownership and household income and poverty, racial gaps, widen under Obama. And I think what this tells us is that political power in and of itself is neither necessary nor sufficient to close the racial gaps that we've seen. And I say it's not sufficient because we've had the black power, accumulated a tremendous amount of black power over the past five decades. I say it's not necessary because if you look back at what was going on, say, in the first half of the 20th century, before the civil rights activists adopted the strategy of pursuing more political power, back then you saw racial gaps in many areas shrinking, closing, narrowing. Slow but steady progress was being made. So we saw black gaps and black-white gaps in incomes narrow, home ownership narrow, blacks entering the skilled professions narrow, the white-collar professions, black poverty rates, white poverty rates narrow during this period. So during a period when there was a lot more racism than there is today, legal discrimination, and next to no black political clout, we saw racial gaps closing. Since the strategy has been adopted in earnest in the second half of the 20th century, those trends have either slowed, stopped entirely, or in some cases reversed course.
Your book notes that time spent integrating political institutions was, in one way, time not spent nurturing the attitudes, values, and behaviors that have powered the upward mobility of other groups. How do you feel about that?
Well, what I'm saying there is that back in the first half of the 20th century, the reason I think we saw the narrowing of these gaps is because blacks were focused on developing what economists call human capital, the right attitudes, the right behaviors, cultural traits, values that I think are helpful, are conducive to rising in a free market capitalist society. And when the focus was on that, on the nuclear family, and so forth, I think we saw progress. You know, as late as 1960, two out of three black kids were raised by a mother and a father in this country. Today, more than 70% are not. And in many of our inner cities, it's as high as 80 or 90%. And I think that has, in and of itself, has had a huge impact. The breakdown of the black families had a huge impact on the lack of more socioeconomic progress, which, of course, transcends into many other areas, whether we're talking about poverty rates or involvement with the criminal justice system, just on down the line. So I think there was a time when blacks were more focused on the development of that human capital, and it served us very well. And since we've moved away from that, at the urging of black leaders, we haven't seen those positive trends continue, or at least not continue at the rate at which they were happening before.
Are black leaders and civil rights leaders, are they doing a disservice when they push for government solutions to problems that have more to do with culture?
Oh, absolutely. I think they absolutely are. This does not suggest that blacks should disengage from politics or not run for office or not vote or anything along those lines. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is an over-reliance on politicians to solve problems that blacks face today. Therein lies the problem. And in that sense, you know, black politicians are behaving like other politicians. What we're learning is that many of the agendas of a politician don't necessarily coincide with the agendas of the people that they claim to represent. What I'm also getting at here is that politics is not the most efficient way to move a group from poverty to prosperity. It can happen, but it's just not the most efficient way. It's not the route that most groups have taken in America in their rise out of poverty. And so if you look at the route that the Germans took, or the Italians took, or Jews took to rise out of poverty in America, they typically did not focus on electing, quote-unquote, their own to office. That was not the focus. Focus was on developing culturally, developing the habits and behaviors and attitudes that would help them rise economically. Later, they got interested in electing politicians from their own ethnic backgrounds. But that was not the focus initially. One exception, and it's worth noting this, are the Irish. The Irish came and did focus on politics, just as blacks have, and were tremendously successful, just as blacks have been. In the early 1920s and late 1800s, you saw Irish running political machines, running large cities like Philadelphia, Boston, New York. But at the time, the average Irish American was not doing very well. The Irish middle class was not growing, and it was quite small. And it wasn't really until the decline of those political machines that we saw the rise of the Irish middle class, to the point where today the Irish American is earning more, better educated than the average American. So politics is one way to go. It's just not the most efficient way, and that is why I think the black leadership would be wise to revisit the strategy.
Mr. Riley, do you think over the past 30 or 40 years, the national media, news media, has been too gentle on these issues?
I think they've been very skittish when it comes to talking about the role that black culture plays in racial disparities in this country. Yes, absolutely. And I talk about that quite a bit in False Black Power, mostly through a discussion of what a couple black sociologists, a very prominent black sociologist, William Julius Wilson and Orlando Patterson, both of Harvard right now. And they've talked about their fellow social scientists' unwillingness, skittishness about talking about the role of black culture and how they're not doing low-income blacks any favors by avoiding this topic, avoiding this discussion. And it's something that really dates back to the Moynihan Report that came out in the mid-1960s, which talked about the disintegration of the black family and the economic consequences that would follow suit. And Moynihan took a lot of criticism for that. There were major civil rights victories happening at the time, and people said that he was raining on their parade. They said, let's just focus on the political advancement of blacks. The rest will take care of itself, and we don't need this sort of criticism right now. And Moynihan was ostracized. He was heavily criticized, both by academics and by the civil rights leadership. And since then, a lot of social scientists and a lot of politicians, frankly, have shied away from going there, so to speak, talking about the role of culture. But it's hard to see how we are going to really address some of these pressing problems in low-income black communities unless we're honest in our discussion.
On that point, do you feel political correctness has hurt the black cause because those who want to speak the facts are sometimes branded racist?
Yes, absolutely. I think absolutely. That is still, that charge of racism still stings in our society. And so, yes, people feel that, you know, it's not my problem. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to take the criticism for speaking up about some of these issues. We also, however, have a political party in this country, the Democrats, that do quite well politically by playing up racism as an all-purpose explanation for racial disparities, and also suggesting that the government can solve the problems in these communities if only we spend enough money on them, and telling blacks that you are not responsible for any of these disparities we see today, for these high crime rates, for these incarceration rates, for this lagging academic achievement, for these low marriage rates, for these fatherless, that's none of your fault. This is all a legacy of racism, a legacy of slavery, a legacy of Jim Crow. And so that is the message that gets out there. Blacks are encouraged to see themselves as victims and to look to the government to solve their problems. And for one party, you know, that gets people to the polls and helps them get elected. So they continue to push that message, even though I believe it's doing quite a bit of harm in terms of closing these racial gaps.
Is racial discrimination still, you think, a major barrier to black advancement?
No, I don't think it is. I think racism still very much exists in this country, and I don't expect to live to see the day when it doesn't. But that is different from believing that racism is the biggest barrier to black progress today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe it is, and I don't believe it has been for a long time. And one of the reasons is because, as I discussed in False Black Power, you can look back at the progress being made by blacks in the 1920s and 30s and 40s. So generations of blacks that were living through Jim Crow, only a generation or two removed from slavery, yet they were making tremendous economic progress in this country at a time when the government was at best indifferent to them and at worst hostile to their efforts to improve themselves. Yet we saw tremendous black gains when it comes to leaving poverty, educational attainment, entering white-collar professions. Blacks were closing the gap with whites. Again, slow but steady progress was being made. Today, I think a black person in America is more likely to encounter a racial preference than a racial slight. And that was not true of blacks 50, 60, 70 years ago. So, no, I don't think that that racism is a major barrier today, even though I still believe that racism exists.
What do you think of the Black Lives Matter movement and its claims about policing, racial profiling, and the criminal justice system?
Well, I don't have a problem with a group like Black Lives Matter going after police misconduct. I don't think the police are saints. I think they make mistakes. I think there is corruption that exists in the criminal justice system and in our police departments, and I don't have a problem with a group calling that out. My problem is when you try to explain racial disparities in the criminal justice system through that prism and that prism only, as if police brutality or racist cops or judges or prosecutors explain the black incarceration rates that we see today. I don't believe that's true. In fact, I think that's laughable. It just does not stand up to scrutiny. The idea that the main problem in these black ghettos is policing rather than the behavior of, the young men, mostly young men, in these neighborhoods, I think is a false narrative that the Black Lives Matter movement has been pushing and that too many on the left have been indulging. And, there are a number of statistics that bear this out. For instance, we don't have a national database on police shootings in this country. Maybe we should have one. I wouldn't be opposed to putting something like that together. But the reality right now is that different police departments keep different levels of detail when it comes to the conduct of their officers and using lethal force. But we do know that in New York City, which is the nation's largest police department, they have kept detailed records on police shootings going back to the early 1970s. And if you go back to 1971, the earliest records that they have, there were about 314 police shootings in New York City in that year with more than 90 fatalities, around 96 fatalities. You fast forward to 2015, you're down to 26 police shootings and 8 fatalities. So that's a greater than 90% reduction in both police shootings and police shooting fatalities over the past 4.5 decades in the nation's largest police department in the nation's largest city. And New York City is not alone in this reduction in the use of force by police over the decades. Yet you have a movement out there, the Black Lives Movement, premised on the notion that cops are increasingly gunning down young black men. It just does not square with the facts. And that's my problem with the movement. I think that their focus on the police is misplaced. And the problem there is not just that it's a false narrative, it's worse than that. I think it's going to impact how these communities get policed and impact it in the worst way. You're going to end up with cops who are less likely to leave their cars, to engage, to go about their jobs proactively, which gives the bad guys the upper hand. And the bad guys focus on the law-abiding members of these communities, which, of course, is the majority of people in these communities. So I think this false narrative, which could lead to cops not doing or being as aggressive as we'd like them to be in these communities to keep them safe, is another bad outcome of this
false narrative that the groups like Black Lives Matter are pushing.
Are there any specific policies that you would support that would incentivize black self-help and the acquisition of what you call human capital?
I think this is something that the black community is going to have to figure out on its own. I don't think the solutions are going to come from black political saviors. We don't need another Obama. We don't need another Martin Luther King. That's not what's needed. What's needed is for these black communities to get their act together. There are things I think federal government can do, or that the government can do and politicians can do, to not exacerbate the situation. And I've called for things like school choice, which I think inner-city blacks support tremendously, but black politicians often do not because they take money from teachers' unions, which oppose school reforms like that. I think that these occupational licensing requirements, which keep young black budding entrepreneurs from, say, starting their own taxi cab service or hair braiding salon, are very harmful. And I think that politicians can do something about that. I think lifting the minimum wage only prices younger, less experienced people out of the labor force, many of whom happen to be black. So I've long called for us to simply stop raising the minimum wage and making these people too expensive to hire. So there are a number of areas where I think policymakers could help things along. But ultimately, I think these solutions are going to come from the black people living in these communities themselves.
The name of the book is False Black Power, with a question mark on the end. The author is Jason Riley. Thank you for joining us today on Q&A. This is very informative and provocative reading.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more on Q&A in just a moment on the Talk of the Quad Cities. 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood. And we stream live right to your smartphone at kqna.com.
Load up the RV and hit the open road. To the repair shop? Now that's not my idea of a fun trip, and it sure isn't convenient. So let High Country Rec Bee Center come to you. Mobile service is just one of their specialties. They'll even troubleshoot for you over the phone, so you're not paying for unnecessary parts and repairs. And they're an authorized warranty and service center for all the major RV appliance manufacturers and extended warranty work. So to schedule service or just ask them a question, call them at 772-8231 or online at hicountryrvcenter.com.
You're listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
And stay tuned now for Talk of the Town, Chino Valley with Arlene Allen. She has Roxanne Hull from YRMC in the bullpen there. And then stay tuned the next couple of days for rain, cold, possible snow showers. Then join me here again Tuesday at 3 with Karen Russell from MVRRH. That is tomorrow at 3 on Q&A when I will see you on the radio.
You've been listening to Q&A on KQ&A. Today's show was sponsored by the Yavapai Regional Medical Center, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce, Artful Eye Jewelers, and Prescott College. The views expressed on today's show do not necessarily reflect the views of KQ&A, Prescott Valley Broadcasting, our employees, or our advertisers. Join us next time for Q&A with DJ Phone on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM in Prescott, and at 95.5 FM in Cottonwood and Prescott Valley, KQ&A.